to the Daily Gold Podcast. Covering precious metals, the junior mining sector, and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roybern.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Daily Gold Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. With us today, he's not a new guest, I've had him on before. He's Jeff Christian. He is the founder and managing partner of CPM Group, a precious metals consultancy. And, you know, guys, in our industry, in our business with precious metals, you know, there can be a lot of, you know, hyperbolic statements going around and that type of thing. And so, you know, when we talk to Jeff, we know that we are getting the real and true facts. So I don't want to irritate any of my listeners and audience out there, because you know that I'm all about facts. But you know, there are some segments, and I appreciate these people, but they do get a little fantastical and, you know, hyperbolic at times. I get a little hyperbolic at times. But Jeff, you know, enough of me droning on here. Let's get right to it, because I know you're very busy. The first thing is, which I want to hear from you, can you please discuss all of the factors that you think are driving this move in gold right now?
Oh my God. There are a lot of factors driving gold right now. And one of the things that is very prominent is that political issues, both international political issues and domestic political issues in a number of countries, are much more important in driving investment demand for gold than they have been for a long, long time, decades. The simple question, answer to your question, is what's driving gold is investment demand. You know, and then you can drill down and say, well, why are investors buying gold? And is it one big whale the way some people say? No, it's not. What we're seeing is a very diverse group of investors. Geographically diverse, you have investors buying a lot of gold in China, in the Middle East, in India, in other Asian countries, in Europe, in the United States and Canada. You know, you have a very geographically dispersed demand for gold. You also have a demographically demand for gold, in that you're seeing large institutions, smaller institutions, specialty funds, commodity indexed funds, commodity funds, retail investors buying gold. So it's a very widespread demand. Central banks have been buying more gold over the last few years. It's not clear the extent to which they've been participating in the March and April increase in prices, because central banks tend to be much more price sensitive than retail investors or institutional investors. Investors will chase a price higher, and central banks will tend to say, I'm going to wait until the investors leave, the price comes down, and we'll buy on the dips. Now, that's changed over the last few years, and central banks have been showing increased willingness to buy gold at higher prices, you know, levels at which they would have eschewed buying gold 4 years ago, 5 years ago. So it's hard to say whether or not central banks are in there. We do know that if you look at the People's Bank of China, which in 2023, net central bank demand for gold was 14 million ounces. And the People's Bank of China accounted for 7 million out of that 14 million. And the People's Bank was basically sopping up excess gold that had come into the Chinese market in 2022. You had a very sharp decline in investment demand and jewelry demand in China in 2022. The price went from 2040 down to 1640 in early November of 2022. The People's Bank, which had not bought any gold from 2019 until November of 2022, came back in and said at 1640 were buyers. And they were consistent buyers, and they stopped up a lot of that excess metal that had built up in the Chinese market by the end of 2023. In the first 2 months of this year, the People's Bank has continued to buy gold, but at half the monthly rate that they were buying last year. You know, so it's not clear about central banks. But, you know, again, going back to your question, it's broad-based investment demand demographically, geographically, the types of investors who are buying. Central banks may be in there. And then you say, well, why are they buying? And then it goes back to my first part of the response. Politics are very important. International politics, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the absolutely unethical behavior of the U.S. Congress in delaying for 6 months getting additional arms to Ukraine, the equally unethical U.S. government policy of prolonging that war unnecessarily by withholding offensive weapons from the Ukraine government. You know, the U.S. government has a policy. They want that war to continue because the longer it continues, the more destructive it is of Putin's regime and Russia as a world power and as an economic power. And so that's continuing. You have the Middle Eastern problems coming in. You have ongoing issues related to Taiwan and China's attitude toward Taiwan. You have a number of civil wars going on from Sudan to Burma, whatever it's called now, and other things there. Then you have the domestic politics. You have very much dysfunctional, not only domestic politics, but social norms breaking down in the United States, not in too good of shape in Canada or Mexico, in bad shape in the UK, in worse shape in various European countries, ranging from Italy to Hungary to Poland and Germany and France. And then you have Chinese domestic politics, which are showing some very interesting developments, as well as India and other countries. So you have domestic and international political factors that have become much more important in investors' minds. And that's been driving some of the demand for gold. You also have economic issues, including interest rates being higher. You have a strong stock market. You have a lot of people who have made a lot of money in stocks and bonds over the last year or so, and they're very much worried. They're looking at the economic outlook. They're looking at financial market outlooks, and they're saying, okay, let's say that the stock market declines. How do I protect, how do I capitalize some of my recent gains? And some of that money is moving into gold and gold assets out of the stock market and such, you know. And I know that you guys, you know, the other people you interview, always, they don't talk about a decline in the stock market. The stock market's going to collapse. The stock market's dead. That's nonsense. I'm sorry. You know, you know, with all due respect, the people who have different opinions, the idea that the stock market is going to collapse is just nonsense. You know, the stock market collapsed in September, October of 1987. By December, it was back up where it had been. You know, the stock market declines and then it picks up again. Yeah. And people who say, oh my God. Yeah,
You off, I agree with you, by the way, because even during the global financial crisis, you know, this collapse and this collapse. And if you look at the definition, you're right. That's really 1929, 1987. Even a 40% bear market is not a collapse when you actually look at the definition of collapse. So, yes, that term gets overused and used incorrectly.
Yeah, NASDAQ collapsed 85%.
Yes, that's a collapse, yes.
And then it dusted itself off and made new records. Yeah, you lost but investors lost like $5 trillion in the internet stock bubble burst in 2000, 2001.
Well, I was investing then, so I did lose a little bit. But I did get in early enough that I came out much higher, so... That's a side story. So you're not incorrect there. I mean,
Anyway, yeah. So to wrap it up, the simple question, the answer to your question is there are all sorts of economic, financial, and political factors that are driving investors around the world to buy more gold. And that's what's pushing the price up.
To follow up on that, educate us on how the factors may have changed given the move in gold, let's say from 2100 to 2400. Is there a factor or two that is going ahead of the pack there and driving this recent breakout in gold, or is it kind of too early to tell?
Well, it's very interesting because, one of the factors that's happened is, again, the increased importance of political developments in the minds of investors has definitely increased over the last 2 years, 3 years. It probably should have increased earlier, but you know, sometimes we're all a little bit slow to wake up. Another factor is that if you go back to 2021, 2022, people's concern about inflation was a factor driving them, some investors, into gold, and it drove gold prices to record highs, as was a decline in the stock market. In late 2023 into early 2024, and I guess it's not early anymore, it's a third of the year is over already, what you're seeing is that there's still some residual inflation concern, but high stock prices are driving investment demand because, again, people are looking to capitalize their gains and protect themselves from an inevitable decline in the stock prices. Even if they only fall 10%, why would you put up with that? And another factor that's changed is interest rates, where there was a consensus, CPM Group was sort of off to the side of the consensus, that interest rates would have to fall, and they would have to fall fast and far in 2022 and in 2023. And by late 2023, the financial markets were finally coming to understand, perhaps, that monetary authorities were telling them what they were going to do and then doing it. You know, and the Fed and the ECB and other central banks were very clear and very explicit that interest rates would hang up higher longer than the financial markets seemed willing to accept. And the financial markets were hoping for a decline in the stock market, and that would help gold. In fact, what's happened is interest rates have held up, and people are saying, okay, interest rates are holding up. Now, the relationship between interest rates and gold prices is very important to understand. What's really important is, why are interest rates high or rising or low or falling, right? If interest rates are high because the Fed is quelling inflation, and inflation goes from 9% to 3.8%, or 2.8%, or 3.8%, then investors say, well, okay, the monetary authorities are doing their job and they're succeeding in controlling inflation. I don't need to buy gold. If interest rates are high and the inflation has plateaued at twice the level of what the Fed says, investors can say, wait a second, this is an indication that inflation is perhaps not under control and it could rise again, which would prompt even higher interest rates and greater weakness in the overall economy. Therefore, I should buy gold. So one of the things that you have to do when you're looking at interest rates relationship with gold is you have to look at why interest rates are there. And what we've seen over the last 3 to 6 months is people are saying, wait a second, interest rates are high and they're not falling because inflation is still an issue. And that's been a big change, you know. Another thing is the actual levels. If you look at the relationship between changes in interest, real inflation-adjusted interest rates and gold prices, what you find is like a 16% correlation. And what you find is there are periods when they're moving, you know, higher interest rates are driving gold prices down. There are periods where higher interest rates and higher gold prices coexist, which is sort of what we're seeing right now. And you look and say, well, where is it that higher interest rates are negative for gold? And it's a 3% real interest rate, right? So a few weeks ago, I was saying, look, 3% real interest rates, 4% inflation, that's 7% nominal rates. I don't know anyone who's predicting 7% nominal U.S. Treasury rates. The next day, Jamie Dimon said, hey, nominal interest rates could go to 8%. So maybe, you know, people are starting to think that, but it really takes like 3% or higher real rates before investors say, I can lock in 3% real rates on treasuries. Why am I investing in gold? So we've got a long way to go, because right now you've got 3.8% real nominal, you have 3.8% inflation, you have 5%, 5.25% interest rates, 5%. Well, if you go up 10 years or 5 years, it's 4%. You've got, you know, less than 0.5% real interest rates. So you've got a long way to go before real interest rates are a drag on gold prices. The other factor that we keep saying is, look, stop hoping for lower interest rates. Because the Fed will not lower interest rates because everything's going well. You know, inflation's slowly coming down and the economy is doing very well. We're reducing inflation on a slow basis and we're not throwing the economy into a recession. The Fed will only lower interest rates when they are much more concerned about the economic outlook. So you shouldn't be rooting for lower interest rates, because when you see lower interest rates, that means that the monetary authorities, who are much more on top of the economy than you are as a private investor, or even a stockbroker or a gold promoter, the Fed, you know, lower interest rates will tell you that the Fed and monetary authorities are really worried about the economic outlook. And, you know, you may say, well, this is good for gold, but it's bad for you as an economic agent in the real world. So don't root for lower interest rates, because they're going to be a sign that the, you know, the collapse of Western civilization or something less than that is occurring.
Okay, Jeff, there's one follow-up. I don't know if it's a follow-up. I want to talk about bonds, because if you look at, you know, gold divided by TLT or whatever bond thing you want to use, I mean, that chart has gone parabolic in the last couple of years. Is, you know, we've had the huge sell-off in bonds since 2021. I mean, I personally think we're in a new secular bear market in bonds based on the data that I'm looking at. The data and everything that you're looking at, I mean, what impact are you seeing from, let's just say, boomers and other bond investors just putting some of that money into gold? Is that having any impact in the market? Is it too early to tell, or is it just really not that significant?
Well, I think you have to look at what bonds you're looking at. And, you know, one of the things that we've seen over the course of 2023 and into 2024 is actually very strong demand for treasury bonds and treasury notes. The amount of treasuries held by offshore entities, governments, and investors rose 10.5% last year to a record $8 trillion. So there's no central banks dumping treasuries. You know, in fact, they're moving to treasuries. And that goes back to the first question, is like, what's driving this? What you're seeing right now is increased concerns on the part of investors about the political future, the economic future, financial institute stability. And we've seen this across financial markets. There is a de-risking. And U.S. treasuries are the least risky, or among the least risky interest-bearing assets you can have. So, and that, you need U.S. dollars to buy them. You need U.S. dollars to buy real estate. U.S. real estate is probably the best real estate that you can invest in, and gold. So you're seeing very strong demand for the dollar. You're seeing very strong demand for treasuries, and you're seeing strong demand for gold. So if you're talking about treasuries, I don't necessarily see weakness. If you're talking about anything else that has a higher risk, and if there's a lot of counterparty risk, then you have people getting away from it. So on a macro level, you've seen a shift away from corporate bonds and municipal bonds to treasuries. On a gold level, you've had this situation over the last 3.5 years until the middle of March, where investors were buying 24, 25, 26 million ounces of physical gold a year out of concern. Yeah, that's a high volume of gold net investment demand. But they were selling ETFs. You lost about, I think, 6 million ounces of ETF holdings over the last 3 years. Or maybe it was more than that. No, it was six last year. It was 20 over the last 3 years. So you've seen investors moving away from ETFs. And that's a publicly available piece of data. So people say, oh, well, investors must not be interested in gold because ETF holdings are falling. No, actually, investors have been stepping up and buying more gold, but they want gold owned directly. They don't want shares of offshore companies that have all sorts of financial market counterparty risk between the managers and the administrators and the depositories. They say, no, I want to own gold as a risk aversion asset, and I want to own that gold directly. I may not store it myself, but I want to own it directly. I don't want ETFs. So you're seeing on a micro level in terms of the gold market, you're seeing investors saying, I want to de-risk and I want to get rid of counterparty risk. And you're seeing the same thing on a macro level, for example, in the bond market, where people are saying, I'm still interested in treasuries because they are relatively more secure or lower risk, but I want to get rid of some of these other bonds, corporate bonds, municipal bonds, sovereign debt issued by countries that are not in as good of shape as the United States. So that's what I see about what, that's what I think about bonds, if that answers your question.
Well, let me just press you a little bit, because you say that people are buying bonds, and I mean, it's not an incorrect statement. I mean, we have the interest rates are very high. People can make a good income on that. But still, like, if you just compare, if you're looking at the total return on bonds, you know, I mean, I guess most of the decline was in 2022, but you look at the total return on bonds historically, you know, since the Fed started hiking, they've been a disaster, you know, and gold divided by bonds, that intermarket relationship, gold has been crushing bonds. So, I mean, I think I read that China is starting to buy a little bit more. They're going back into buying treasuries. But I guess in the last couple of years, I mean, investors have been selling bonds, you know, because rates have been
higher. They were selling bonds when they were 0.25% interest rate.
So you're saying it's kind of stabilized now, and you know, there's been more buying.
2023 and 2024 are not 2021, 2022. I mean, it's night and day in terms of the bond market, in terms of the stock market, in terms of gold market, and
let me interrupt. So you don't see people like boomers in the U.S. trimming their bonds or selling their bonds and buying gold?
We're not really seeing a lot of that. And that's actually one of the themes that we have at CPM Group in terms of our business plan and everything, is looking at younger investors who have not necessarily, you know, there was a period of time, say 2009 through 2019, when you did see younger investors moving into gold and to a lesser extent silver. But once the pandemic hit and the global lockdown and the global recession hit, and in the subsequent 4 years now, 3 years, three plus years, we haven't seen that trend continue. And it's an issue, I think, for the gold market, the silver market, and the gold and silver mining companies, that they need to do some outreach and education for younger investors. Because in the United States and in Europe, I don't think you're seeing the kind of demand for gold and silver that you would expect otherwise from younger investors.
Yeah, how young are we talking about here? Are we talking about 20s,
30s? 20s and 30s. Yeah, if you look at the demographics of gold investors, they've actually been relatively stable since I got into the business in the 70s. In the late 70s, somebody did a demographic study of who was buying physical gold in the United States. And it was like, you know, 40 to 65 educated. 90% of the gold being purchased in the United States were college educated, professional, a lot of whites. Males at the time, upper income, 40 to 65. Somebody else did that study again in the late 90s, and it was, you know, college educated, upper income, 40 to 65. But females were much more prominent. They were probably equally divided between male and female. So females had taken over a substantial portion of household financial decision making by the late 1990s. It didn't feel like that if you were a female, but you know, it, it, on a, on a annual on an average basis in the surveys, you saw that shift. But yeah, again, it's 40 to 65. And that makes sense because those are the salad years. You know, that's when you have highest income and you probably have the highest disposable income too.
Just a quick follow-up on that. Do you have any data on 20s and 30s people going into crypto?
Well, I mean, not really. And I tried to pay as little attention to cryptos as possible.
Me too. But I had to ask it.
But, you know, if you look at the, quote, market cap of cryptos, you know, it went from virtually nothing, like $500 billion at the end of 2021 to $3 trillion at the end of 22 to $800 million, billion dollars at the end of 2023. Back to about 2.7. So, you know, fortunes have been made and lost in cryptos. And you do see that. I mean, there was somebody who tried to have a silver and crypto conference last year, and it was overrun by people who were more interested in cryptos, who were younger people, who also wanted to spend more time in the casinos than in the lecture halls.
Yeah, not surprising when you're thinking about crypto and the people who are buying crypto. But anyway, Jeff, let's get in. Okay, just a couple more questions. Let's talk about the gold ETFs because, you know, they haven't been adding gold as we've had this great move. So give me some color on what you think is driving that and if you have any forecast on if people will come back to the gold ETFs.
Well, as I said, you know, up until the middle of March, you had seen for 3.25 years net sales of gold ETFs. And our take on that was that it wasn't that these investors were negative on gold. In many cases, we think they were selling their gold ETFs and buying physical gold, replacing it, that position or part of that position with physical gold. It was a matter of counterparty risk where they wanted to not have gold that they didn't have access to. You know, they had gold, they had shares in a gold ETF, which was an offshore company, whatever that means. A lot of people don't even know that was administered and managed by financial institutions. And it was interesting because in 2021 and 2022, you actually saw people selling the smaller ETFs and the larger ETFs were growing during that period of time in terms of number of holdings. And what you were seeing there were people saying, if I do want to hold my gold through ETFs, I want to hold it in the largest, most liquid funds, ETFs that are managed by systemically important financial institutions. So you had in 2021, 2022, people shifting out of the smaller ETFs into the bigger ones. After Credit Suisse went bust a year ago, you know, in March, I think it was March of 2023, you started seeing the bigger ones do drop too. And so it's a matter of counterparty risk there. Now, in the last 2 weeks of March, we saw a lot of people pour into ETFs. And what that was the gold price was starting to accelerate its increase, its rise. And there were any number of investors who said, I need to buy gold exposure. And the easiest and quickest way is to click a button on my screen and buy ETFs. So we wrote something for our clients at the time and said, okay, we think that what you're looking at is investors saying, I need gold, short-term investors, many of whom are not in the gold market per se, saying, I want to buy gold exposure. The easiest, quickest way to do that is with an ETF. We think that's a short-term phenomenon. And if the gold price sort of stabilizes at higher prices or even falls, we think that you'll see, you know, the ETF investors as a whole going back to net liquidations. And again, you know, I guess it's partly a matter of education that industry should be working on trying to convince investors that the counterparty risk is not as great as they might think it is.
Okay, Jeff, I want to get if you have a forecast or I want to say prediction because that's, you know, everybody, you don't need any expertise to make a prediction, but Let's think about a market forecast. I did notice the title of another interview where it said 2025, you know, gold is going higher. There's going to be a recession. I don't know if you actually said that or if the publisher took liberty with the title, because we know how that works. Yeah. What are your, at least currently, what are you sensing? What could come for the gold market in, like, let's say the next 12, 18 months?
Our expectation is that you might see the gold price sort of consolidate over the next several months. There's some seasonality that will kick in. You've also got prices already having risen to a very high level. There should maybe some backing off of the fears, but that by the time we get to August or September or the fourth quarter, economic and political conditions become more problematic. Investors resume their buying and we see gold prices move to new highs. Our expectation had been that the price would be relatively quiet in the first half of this year, rise in the last 4 months of this year into 2025. We still think that the big increase comes in the last 4 months of this year into 2025. So we're still looking for new record highs yet this year or early next year.
The big increase second half or towards the end of the year, I mean, that considering we've actually had a good increase already, I mean, you can see an even bigger move. I mean, I'm not saying, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that we could see an even bigger move second half of the year.
You know, we project annual average prices, and we've had annual average prices over the last 3-4 years. And we continue to expect a new record, much larger this year. It was 1950. Last year was the average price, got up to 2100 or whatever, but the average was 1950 last year. We have a much higher average for this year and for 2025. And then within that average, you have to say, well, how high can it spike? And, you know, we'd say, you go back to 1980, gold went from $190 to $850 over the course of 1979. But the average price in 1980 was like $600. Silver went from, you know, $5 to $50, and the average price was something like $21. So if we're saying that we're looking for an average price of gold and silver that are close to, if not higher than, you know, in the case of gold, new record, in case of silver, close to the record annual average price, which was about $34, $35 an ounce in 2011, 2012. That doesn't say a lot to you about how high the prices could spike on an intraday basis. You know? So our expectation is, the prices could spike higher. So, you know, I don't see gold at 10,000. I wouldn't be surprised to see gold spike sharply higher late this year, early next year.
That soon.
Yeah. I mean, election is the first Tuesday after the first Monday of November. Yeah. So I think that the political environment and the economic environment are such that, you know, late this year, early next year, you probably will see another spike in prices. I'm not sure how high it would go. I kind of doubt that it goes over $3,000 because there are a lot of people who would take profits at $2,700, $800, $3,000, as they did at $850 in 1980 and as they did at $1,900 in 2011.
What does that mean for silver? So it sounds like, I mean, I know you're aware of technicals and price action and all that. I've never heard you talk about it publicly, but, you know, me and other people are looking at silver and looking at that $50 resistance and gee, if silver can ever, you know, get above $50, Jeff, you know that the silver bugs are, they're going to be pretty irritating if that happens. So do you think silver could, based on what you're saying, you think silver could spike to somewhere close to 50, but then it would come back down to the 30s?
Yes, exactly. You know, for all of the silver bugs who say if it breaks above 50, it's going to go to 100 or 700 or 3,000, there are many more people who are sitting on silver and have been disappointed that it hasn't gotten back to 30, let alone 50. And at $50, the economics of silver mining, of silver scrap refining, of using silver in a whole array of manufactured products change. And, you know, you could see $50, but you can't sustain $50 because there's 5.5 billion ounces of silver in refined form above the ground, mostly held by investors, and some portion of them will take profits. Now, if you go back to 1980, it was probably 10% of the above ground stocks or less that came into the silver market when the price went from $5 to $50. This is less than 10% of the above ground silver inventories were sold in that rally. But it was enough to take the price down very sharply from $50 to $16.
And there was some government intervention that helped out there.
In silver?
Yeah.
How so?
Didn't they raise the margin requirements and something like that to the Hunt brothers? They were trying to corner the market.
The U.S. government has nothing to do with the margin requirements. Actually, the U.S. government did step in that it supervised the bailout of the Hunts after the market had collapsed. The exchanges raised the margins and then ultimately
did they keep
a liquidation only?
I need to read up more on that. But didn't they raise them like multiple times?
Yeah, and that's not uncommon. And it's not uncommon across commodities. You know, silver people look at the silver market with silver shaded glasses. And if they looked at commodity markets in general, they'd see that the margins rise and fall across commodities
right.
all the time. And, you know, one of the myths of the Hunt brothers debacle is that the exchanges changed the rules on the Hunt brothers. They didn't. They imposed the rules that were on the books all along. The COMEX and the CBT and the CME all had in their rule books that the boards that controlled the exchanges had the authority to take such steps as were necessary to maintain the integrity of the markets. And if you go back then, and you know, I knew Nelson Bunker Hunt, and I was very much involved in the markets at that time. If you go back then, you know, it wasn't just the silver market that was shaking. It was other commodity markets, and it was the broader financial system. But it wasn't because of the Hunts, and it wasn't because of margins. It was because Paul Volcker had taken over the Fed and said, you guys have been targeting interest rates, and the inflation rate has gone to 14%. We're going to target going forward inflation. And so we're taking U.S. Treasury bill rates from 7% to 21% to squeeze the inflation out of the system. And it threw us into what was then the deepest recession in the post-war period. And that right. had implications for everything from copper to wheat to silver and gold to stocks and bonds
and,
to household
and
income.
As you know, I mean, you know, whatever you believe on all that, you know, manipulation, suppression, you could look at a price chart. And I mean, anything that goes, those yeah. were the biggest, I mean, probably the biggest parabolic moves we've ever seen in major markets.
Well, I'll say this. I try not to believe anything. And when somebody tells me, well, everybody's open, entitled to their own opinion, I say, everybody's entitled to their own opinion if it's based on facts. And if someone wants to say, well, that's just your opinion, and they're holding a position that is based on beliefs and hearsay and nonsense. I mean, I hear so much garbage about what was going on with the Hunts. And I even saw something from a major purveyor of financial market data. And they did a thing because it was, I guess, 50 years or 40 years since the Hunts. And they had this guy who was supposedly a silver expert within house. And he gave a talk and I was listening to him. I was like, that's not at all what happened. Yeah, but that's not uncommon. And you see that, you know, you see that with the stock market. You see that with somebody else sent me a thing this morning, a history of Goldman Sachs. And, you know, I could chalk up like 5 or 6 errors that they had, not just about Goldman Sachs, but about the financial markets in general and timing of things and why things happened. There's tremendous amount of misinformation and misunderstanding. All markets are asymmetrical, commodity markets are much more asymmetrical than stock and bond markets.
Yes. Well, Jeff, that's why I have you on. I mean, that's why I have other people on as well. I only deal in fact-based analysis, but I mean, that is your specialty in an industry where people can, you know, they can escape themselves from the facts and they get hyperbolic. And again, that's why I love having you on, my audience as well. Thank you so much for coming on and answering all my questions. And, you know, we'll have to have you back later in the year. See if you're projection has panned out. I happen to personally agree with you, so we'll see. You know, let's talk maybe in the summer or in the fall, and we'll see how things are going.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we issued a buy recommendation on gold in mid-November 2000, and we said, you know, for 20 years people have been asking us, will we see $850 gold again? And for 20 years we could end that conversation by saying, you give me an economic and political environment like we had in 1979, 14% inflation, 21% interest rates, American hostages in Iran, Soviet troops in Afghanistan, a quadrupling of oil prices, the deepest recession in the post-war period, and I will grant you 850. And in November of 2000, we said, we think that the economic and political environment over the next several decades will be much more hostile than it was in that 1 year period, 1979, and gold blows right past 850. Now, that speech, which was to coincide with the launch of what was then our gold survey, not now our gold yearbook, was a week after George W. Bush was elected.
Wow. It's so really impressive.
I'll talk to you in the middle of November.
Well, Jeff, before we sign off here, last thing, for all the listeners out there who want to learn more about your work and follow your work, how can they do so?
www.cpmgroup.com is our website. There's a lot of free reads and free videos and free reports, reports that we've done, as well as reports we've done for white labels for some of our clients that distribute them to their clients. There are gold, silver, platinum yearbooks that you can buy. We will be launching our silver yearbook in the middle of May. You can pre-order it. We launched our gold yearbook in the middle of March. You can buy it and download it as an ebook. It's like 240 pages of the definitive work on gold. And then you can send us an email at info.cpmgroup.com and say, this is who I am. This is my exposure to commodities, precious metals. Can you guys help me? How can you help me?
Okay, great. Jeff, thanks so much for coming on, and look forward to following up over the months ahead.
Glad to be here. Call me again. I'm around.
Thank you for tuning into the Daily Gold Podcast. For more interviews, editorials, and analysis, log on to thedailygold.com. And for premium coverage of precious metals and the best junior mining companies, visit thedailygold.com/premium.